This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is just coming along to 6:06 in the evening, and it's time for our monthly show, the Movers and Shakers Town Hall, where we get politicians, ministers, civil society members to come in and answer some of the most pressing questions that you have. Today we have YB Dr. Xavier Jayakumar with us in the studio. He is the Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources. And as mentioned, before we get to our questions, if there's anything you'd like to ask the minister, call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Xavier, welcome to the show and happy Earth Day.
Thank you.
First things first, this is a relatively new cabinet that we're working with, and there are certain issues that appear to clearly fall within your ministry's domain, and then there are others that might include the cooperation or collaboration of multiple ministries. To get a bit of a bird's eye view, can you tell us what are the parameters of your ministry?
Well, it is a new ministry. Mm-hmm. It has been divided. Formerly, it was called the Land and Resource and Environment Ministry. This time, it's called Water, Land and Natural Resources. Previously, water was under a different ministry, under KETA. So what they have done now is they have taken the whole water industry and put into my ministry and removed the environment section of it and put it into MESTAC. So I now have to take care of water from source to tap. And then at the same time, I'm also in charge of all the wastewater treatment plants, like sewage plants. And then it comes land. Land is a federal matter. I'm in charge of all the land that comes under the federal government, both state and federal. And then natural resources is very interesting because the natural resources is not just minerals. It's also to do with habitat. It's also to do with wildlife, forests. and so it kind of jives together. If you look at the three categories that I have in my ministry, water, land, and natural resources, goes hand in hand. And so it's quite an exciting ministry to have to run. And also there are huge challenges that's ahead of us.
Which ministries and MPs do you work most closely with?
Well, I work with MPI, that is YB Theresa Kok. I work with UBIN, who is NASDAQ, and also we work with the Foreign Minister and the Minister for MITI.
Right. So there's a fair amount of collaboration that needs
yes.
to happen. Okay. So when we invited you here, we figured that one of the main things that there is to talk about is, of course, water. Like you said, from source to tap, it's a big responsibility. Let's start with water tariffs, because that's been quite a big subject. What was the impetus for raising the charges?
The raising of the charges has always been there on the table. It's not just because Pakatan Harapan took over the government and we are going straight, jumping into the bandwagon and saying, let's raise the water rates. No, water rates have not been raised for the past 20 years in different states as far as you're concerned. And the rates have stayed stagnant for the past 20 years. But the industry has moved on. And the cost of running the water industry, the capex, it's huge. And water companies are having problem balancing their accounts and the business model doesn't fall right. And so some companies are losing money, but there are companies that make even. But when water companies tell me that they break even, it's not good for us because they won't be able to have extra funds in order to upgrade and keep on upgrading the water industry. And so because of this, when we came in, the overlying emphasis was that because of the long overdue water tariffs that was there, and SPAN has been working on this for many years, so we said, okay, let's put our heads together and get this done once and for all so that the industry can move on. My main aim here is that there must be water 24 hours on your tap and 365 days. Anyone and everyone should be able to get their water dispensed. And this can only be done if there is an agreement between the states and the federal government through SPAN that the business model of the water players in all the states are achievable. That means it works financially for them. And then only you can expect water to be there at your fingertips all the time.
So what has been the confusion and points of contention with the hikes?
Well, it's a Malaysian phenomenon, all right? Whenever you talk about anything to do with the utility rates that's going to increase, of course, there is a huge cry about our standard of living and, you know, cost of living and those things. We understand that very well. I'm sympathetic to that as well. I'm not saying that it's not a parcel of our planning process. We are. But in water planning of the water rates, there are different bands that we use. We go by band, the first band, second band, the third band, the fourth band. So the first band is the most sensitive band. That is people who are, let's say, the B40 group that we are dealing with. And so, of course, we look at it as far as social activities are concerned, the social responsibilities that are there. We will make sure that those areas that where people think that their livelihoods will be affected by raising the bands, that would be the marginal increase in those bands. And some states keep talking about free water, which is continuing with the raise in tariffs. Free water is still continuing. But maybe now some states are saying that free water should not go for everyone, but just the B40 group. I think I accept that argument, and that's good for us in order to see that people who use more water should be able to pay, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the years in Malaysia, because of our water rates and water tariffs being so low, people don't respect water. When I say don't respect, in the sense that they use water just anytime they want and every time they want, because the bill is so minuscule for some people to pay water bills, you know.
Sure.
So that is one of the problems. If you compare Malaysia in terms of water rates, even to our neighbors like Singapore, even for Thailand for the matter, the Thais pay really much higher than us for water, and they know that they are getting the water that is needed to them. So I am just saying that don't look at me because I'm the minister who come in and saying talking about water tariffs, but the need for the water industry to move on is also very important. And the business models have to be right in the state in order for them to move on.
So let's talk a little bit about that increase and how it would translate into... I mean, earlier you mentioned that the priority here is ensuring that clean water is accessible for all, that it's accessible for all the time. How would this increase in tariffs actually translate to that?
Okay, at present, all right, like now, let's go right, jump right into the argument. We are going to have 4 million over accounts that is not going to have water for the next maybe 4 days, three yep. to 4 days, right? It's been announced by SPAN and by iSlango.
Yeah.
What is the reason? Now, you have water plants in the Selangor state that was built for a certain capacity. Let's say this water plant was built for a 100 MLD capacity. For the past 7 years, this water plant has been running at 120 MLD capacity. It was not designed for 100 MLD capacity. But we've been pushing the boundaries in the sense that there's a need, there's a demand. Our reserves are very low, but we cannot stop. We need more water. So this water companies are pushing the equipment to that level. So there's come a time when these companies cannot go on doing it, and you'll have to upgrade, and you'll have to make sure that you go in and do the necessary changes so that they will continue supplying you that amount of water. So this is being done because the delay in this is because it's also very costly in order to go in and upgrade these plants. And these plants are one-off plants. Huh? You don't get spare parts. You just can't go out to the market and buy the spare parts. You have to order the spare parts. The spare parts have to be designed and built for this particular plant. By the spare parts coming in, then we do the program in the sense that it has to be done. And this has to be done because we wanted to get it done before POSA and before Raya.
We are speaking today in the studio with Dr. Xavier Jayakumar live. He is the Minister, of course, of Water, Land and Natural Resources. As we've been saying, send your messages through. Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We've already received some messages, which we will get to right after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Live in the studio with us today, YB Dr. Xavier Jayakumar, Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources. It is our monthly town hall, which means our phone lines are open. Our WhatsApp lines are open. Basically, you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio to ask us any of the pressing questions you might have. Okay, so we've received quite a few, mostly to do with the issue of water. So we'll start with Zaidi, who asks, when will Selangor fully source water from Pahang? The Selangor population is growing, industries are thriving, Selangor has water shortages every year. Set aside egos and source the water from Pahang before the rakyat suffering worsens.
Oh, well, thank you. I think that is settled. When I first came in as a minister, I gave them 30 days to, first of all, finish the deal between the different private companies and IS Selangor, and that's done. The whole Langat 2 project will be fully operational by 2021 in July. And even now, we are already taking some water from Langat, from Pahang. And this is an ongoing process. It's one of the biggest plants, water treatment plants in our region. When I say region, in the whole Southeast Asian. And we are doing about 1,140 MLD. Plant. And so there is a lot of work that's been put in. I pushed the agenda and got a lot of approvals done. And I've been promised that this will be fully effective by 2021.
Our next message comes from Chan, who asks, when can Malaysians expect to be able to safely consume tap water like most developed nations?
We are a developed nation and we can drink tap water. I don't think there's anything wrong with our water. Water that lives out of the water treatment plants are 100% drinkable. The problem is when it reaches in certain areas in our landscape, because of the NRW and leaking pipes and also old pipes, you get tainted water. And because of that, there's a huge problem as far as water is concerned. But I think, on generally speaking, most of the areas in our country, you can drink water from the tap.
And that question actually mentioned the word developed nation, right? And similarly, Wing Hong on Twitter wants to know, how far is our water industry behind compared to a developed nation? So since we are saying we are, let me adapt that to say, how far is our water industry behind nations that we would consider, you know, incredibly developed, for example, like Singapore, Australia, for that matter?
Thank you. First of all, I would like to say that how much do those people there pay for their water in Singapore compared to how much we pay for our water here? How much of capex that is being spent by the Singapore's PUB, yeah? And how much water capex they are spending in order to make sure that their water is clean and it's there compared to us? So we want to get to where, let's say, Singapore is, or whether Denmark is for the matter, or whether Australia is for the matter. But if you look at all these countries, they are continuous spending as far as the water industry is taken as a guideline. It's done continuously. It doesn't stop. The main problem in Malaysia today is you have old pipes that has not been dealt with over the past 20, 25, 30, 30 years. We have an NRW that is huge. NRW is non-revenue water. We are losing revenue from NRW. And some of the states, NRW is high as 67%. And on average, it's about 40, 45%. National average is about 35%. So this is something that we should pay attention to. And we need huge sums of capital expenditure in order to make it right.
So just very quickly before we go to Alan, who's on the line, you mentioned non-revenue water there. Yap Lee Chong and AG both want to know what is being done about this?
Well, we are spending money in order to make sure that non-revenue water is reduced. But then the states don't have enough money to spend on non-revenue water. You must understand water is a state policy in state matter. We in the federal government support them and help them formulate them and make sure the laws are right so that they will run the industry in the most efficient of manners. But the problem is we have a long-standing problem of non-revenue water, and the states do not have enough funds in order to correct the non-revenue water. Let's take Pahang for the matter. Pahang is 46% non-revenue water. That means all the water that leaves a treatment plant of 100 MLD, only 54% is reaching the people. The other 46% just goes underground, and we are losing. And a day, we lose about 5,000 MLD of water just from NRW wastage. That's equivalent to the amount of water that whole of Selangor needs.
Yeah,
it's one day. So if I want to correct, and I am going to correct it, and I've asked for funds from the federal government, just to reduce 1% of NRW in the nation's whole wide nation, 1%, I would have to spend something like 800 million to 1 billion. So that's a lot of money. That is why I say, if you see the Focus magazine, I've said that it takes about 100 B to 150 B in order to correct this whole problem in the country. So it has to be done in stages. So we're giving ourselves 15 to 20 years in order to make sure that we can bring NRW down to a manageable level, so that then the spending can mark the spending down, but you still have to spend in order to keep the industry running.
And right now we have, I believe, Alan on the line. Alan, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, guys. Hi, YB.
Hi.
Yes. So looking at, we have a lot of water issues. You know, water is kind of hard to come by sometimes. Do we have any plan, like what Singapore is doing, where new water is, whereby we can use the sewer water, or I believe they also use the ocean to turn into drinkable water? Do we have anything like that coming? I think that would really help.
Thank you. We have spent huge amounts of money in order to upgrade our sewage system in the country. We are doing centralized sewage system in KL, in Selangor, in Pahang, in Johor, in Penang, in Perak. These are plants that are being built with the latest of technologies and going underground. In due time, we won't have our drains, or drain water, our sewage water, or our wastewater running into rivers and into drains. It will be taken into one centralized area where it will be cleaned. And then that clean water that you're talking about is the new water. That water is at present, sorry to say, it's being pumped back into the river. And that is great to water. It's very, very clean water. So I've instructed IWK and those who are dealing with them to redirect these waters back into the reservoir so that it can go into treatment plants and other, then you can increase the yield by doing this. But again, to get this done, we have to spend money. And it's not a small amount that we are talking about. For an example, to do, say, one centralized plant in Selangor, in Klang, it cost us about 520 million ringgit and over a period of 2.5 years. So we have already have in our plans that we want to spread this money, and also to have new plants all over the place. But we have to spend the money. And, you know, we're not talking about tariffs of water alone. Our tariffs for wastewater is also very, very low. And IWK, being a company that is set up by the Ministry of Finance, is under my ministry, which now deals with sewage water. They are bleeding, and the ministry is supporting them to the tune of nearly 200 million ringgit a year to just be floating. So that is because, though they collect about 93% of the bills, spread over 2 to 3 months and sometimes a year, it's not enough money for them to survive and run. That's because the sewage rates are so low in Malaysia. It's because of that. But everyone wants it to be tip-top and spend money. But when we spend money, the money has to be churned back into the system so that it can be continuously upgraded all the time. So we also have a problem with the sewage rates as well.
And very quickly, our next question comes from Jack, who asked, you know, how can your ministry help if a developer has built houses on land which is sinking? What support can your ministry render?
That's actually not under my ministry. that's under the Ministry of Housing. But, he can always go to the Housing Tribunal, and he can always take it up in the courts, and because they have this 2 years window period for anyone who buys a new house. In any defects within the 2 years, you can go back to the developer. But after the 2 years, I think it's open. Then you'll have to go back to the tribunal, or you have to take it up as a case in the courts.
So just on that note earlier, DMA wants to say, could you elaborate more on your statement that those who use more should be able to pay? DMA is finding it a bit vague.
I don't think it's vague. Because of the water rates at present, those who can afford water rates think that they can wash 5 cars in their houses in the morning, and they can wash their porch 2-3 times a day. You know, they don't mind because the water charges are so low, and you know they can pay as much as easily as they can. So I think those who want to use a lot of water should be able to pay the correct price of water. Let me tell you, the amount of people that use water in Malaysia is very, very high. The United Nations water check system says that a person should use only about 150 liters of water per day. That is the given figures that we have, according to UN. But in Malaysia, on an average, a person uses 210 liters. If I can bring down that usage to about 180 liters per day, you can save 30 liters a person. And if you multiply by the number of people that use water, then you have a lot of extra amount of water. The problem here is that we don't respect the water that we use. We simply think, we take it for granted that when you open our taps, there'll be water. It's okay. Mm. But water is a very, very resource that needs to be checked, and the resource we have to respect in the sense that it doesn't come easily. You have to spend money to get water to your house. So in that way, I think the important thing that we are trying to do here is the tariff rise and everything else also. It's also to check on the water companies that are managing these water resources at present. So through SPAN, we are now checking how transparent these water companies are, how lean they are, the management style, and whether they will be able to continue with the process of having the system right, so that the people will get the commodity that is come to them. So we are also checking on the water companies as well. Let's not say that they are top heavy and they're spending or the OPEX is high. So we are also looking at their accounts in order to make sure that you know, it is manageable and it's run well.
We have today Dr. Xavier Jayakumar, the Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources, in the studio with us. Again, you can call 7733 2900 with any of your questions. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after the 6:30 news.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. In the studio with us today, Dr. Xavier Jayakumar, Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources. And we've been asking you if you have any questions at all that you want to direct to the minister. Now is your time. 7733 2900 is the number to call. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line, holding for a very long time, hopefully still there, is Dava. Dava, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, good evening. This is Doctor, regarding the NRW, you know, I'm surprised to hear the amount. It's such a big amount. Okay, I would like to find out, is there any new methodology which you have come up with to address this issue? You know, we see a lot of NRW, you know, water wastage everywhere. Is there a method where public can do a report and see what's the feedback?
Oh, thank you. Yes, you can. And it's available for you all the time. You can do an Aduan online, and they will come and do the necessary immediately. Usually it's done very quickly, I think, within the 24 hours or even less than that. If you have a leak, they can do it. Your other part of the question is whether there are new techniques. Yes, there are many, many new technologies that are coming online, even from manufacturing of pipes and the way the pipes are made. They got the latest materials that are used, light, last for a very long time. They even have one technique that can tell you that you don't have to take out the pipes. This is a technique whereby you pump in a layer into the present pipe, and just by blowing air, the layer just coats the whole inner area of the pipe. So you don't have the problem of having to dig the pipes out and replacing the pipe. So these are all new technologies that are in place. But we will have to give it a try and see whether it works in our country.
Now, depending on how you view it, Doctor, it's either good or bad timing that you're here, because, of course, there is a water interruption that's been scheduled. So Adrian says, I'm one of those affected this week. I just want to know, when can we expect to get real uninterrupted water supply? And, you know, what's the balance here between what the water companies need to do and what consumers need to do? And Adrian's not alone in asking this. It's come through a couple of times.
I understand. And the anxiety about not having water in your house. You know, you can live without electricity, but you can't live without water. That is one of the things that we are trying to overcome with all the spending that we are doing as far as the water companies are concerned. And that is why we are having upgrading work continuously to make sure that in due course, you won't have the problem of interruption of water as we have had the past few years. And that is why I'm planning with all of you and with also SPAN and with the state companies that in order to make sure that there is uninterrupted water and drinkable water and you can drink water out of the tap, we have to realize that there has to be some money spent in order to upgrade the systems which have been neglected for the past 20, 30 years. And that is where the bottom line is. We'll have to spend in order to make it right.
And we asked you right at the top of the show, I think, what your ministry covers. We've been talking about water for a while because, of course, it's a very pressing issue. But like you said, there are other things involved here. And TEB says, I'm a bird enthusiast and I observe that bird lovers from surrounding countries, except Singapore, are keeping and breeding bird of prey successfully in the last few years, especially Thailand. Will there be any possibilities that the ministry will amend Act 716 to allow local bird lovers to breed and keep these birds?
Well, we are looking at amending most of our laws that is within the ministry. There's a law reform agenda that is going on, and one of that is the Act 117, 173, I think. And so we have decided that we'll go through the laws and acts that are there now in order to look at, because it's high time that we look at these acts because they have been long overdue. It needs reform. So it is in the process. But to the caller who sent in a message that he likes to keep a bird of prey, he has to apply to the ministry in order to for us to look into it. And then I have the authority to approve or not approve
his request.
Yeah.
And on the topic of wildlife, back in July last year, you had said that the ministry was seriously mulling a shoot-on-site policy against wildlife poachers. Have there been any developments on this?
If I have my way, I still have the same thing that I've said, that I'll shoot poachers on site. Recently, we caught two poachers in the jungles in Terengganu. They've been in the jungle for about 6 months, and they are two Vietnamese gentlemen who came in with a visit visa. And what we found on them is quite concerning in the sense that we think that we might have lost two tigers and a spotted leopard and a sun bears and quite a number of wild boars, because what they had with them, the claws, the teeth, the also some of the organs that were dried, and they even had dried meat with them. And also they had about 70 over traps. And they've been laying the traps in the jungle. So this is the main cause for us to lose our tigers. You know, our tigers are in a critical state. We only have about between 180 and 200 of them. We had 3,000 at one time. And now, if we don't pay attention to this, we would lose our tigers forever. And I don't think on my watch that I want to let tigers be lost forever. And so we have started the tiger conservation program for the next 2 years. We are working with all the NGOs who are interested in tigers. There are many of them, along with my ministry and the other ministries. We have gone to even the Ministry of Defense. We've gone to KDN, the police, and we said that we got to put people into the jungle. They have to go and do their walkabouts in the jungle. You know, they have to do patrolling so that we will stop these poachers from killing our tigers.
So up next on the line, we have Shriram, who has a question about forestry. Oh, hold on. I don't think we have Shriram on the line yet. But on that note about the shoot on-site policy, I guess the question is, how do you balance between human rights and environmental protection here? You know, in some cases, there doesn't seem to be proper oversight on these poachers who may accidentally shoot, say, indigenous peoples who might be foraging the forests. So how do you make sure that this system, if you were to implement it, is an accountable one?
All right. Yes, I agree that we will have that problem. But what history has shown us and what some studies have shown us now, and these are all actual studies that have been done. For example, India, Nepal, and Tibet have increased their numbers of tigers over the years just because they have armed patrols in their jungles. And this keeps the poachers away. And they know that they can be shot on sight. And that is the only thing that has increased the number of tigers in India, Nepal, and Tibet. It's the report is accurate and the report is there. In Malaysia, at present, we don't have this. And we don't have enough manpower in order to go and patrol our forests. And our forests are tropical rainforests. Mm. They are very thick. And they are a huge spectrum of them is large. The central forest spine, we have more than 5 million over hectares of forest that we have to cover. And it's not easy. So that is why we are asking for more manpower to go in, especially to the Royal Bulum Forest, to Taman Negara, and also Endang Rompin Forest, in order to make sure that we save, the tigers are safe. If you let the tigers breed, if you let the tigers stay where they are, they will automatically increase in their numbers.
So as we're talking about forests, I think it's important, and land, I think it's important also to look at commodities, for example, oil palm, rubber, durian, and we will get to that conversation after this. If you have any questions for the minister, do call us, 7733-2900 is that number, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. It is our monthly Movers and Shakers Town Hall, which means that our phone lines are open for you to ask your questions directly to the Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources, Dr. Xavier Jayakumar. And again, that number, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
And we have Shriram on the line who has a question about protecting water and forestry. Shriram, what's your question?
Hello, good evening, everyone. YB, my question is, a lot of the issues that fall under your ministry, especially like water conservation, wildlife protection, and so on, many of these, the core things fall under the individual state's purview. So what tools are available to you, and what concrete steps can you take when a state wants to do something that's not in the natural interest, I mean the national interest, like, for example, degazetting a forest reserve, or, you know, demolishing water catchment areas and so on?
Thank you. That's a good question. Of course, the state has got full autonomy on land and also water resources. But the ministry has also got its role to play. We are now talking to all the states and telling them how important it is in order to preserve the forest and also the water basins. If the problem falls to us, and if there is a water treatment plant in any of the areas that is involved, we can go in. We have the powers to go in. But the states also understand the problem at present. Okay, I've been successfully talking to Kedah State, especially, and the Menteri Besar has been working very well with us, and he's cancelled quite a number of these contracts that have been given to companies to deforest in areas, especially the Ulu Muda water basin areas, and he's very sensitive about it. And we are working with Kedah and telling Kedah that there are other ways of getting some finance coming into the state. And we are working with them in order to make sure that this will help the state in the long run. But whenever I talk about, please don't give out forests anymore, be careful about how you degazette forests, the immediate question from the states is you have to compensate us as far as the forests are concerned, because that is their main economy in some states, example of Kelantan, in Pahang, and in Perak. And so we'll have to come up with new ways of having the states earn a living in order to be more friendly with the states themselves. But at the same time, what I have instructed the Forest Department to do is we are going to set a guideline and rules and what we think is best how you can degazette forests. And so this will be very stringent regulations that will be put in place. And we will then send this to the states and ask the states that you follow this whenever you want to degazette any forest. If they don't do it, what I've told my guys in the forest department is we'll publish it. Let the public know that this is what the federal government is advising state governments when it comes to degazetation of forest land. At present, it's a security problem in the country because we are threatened with the main commodity that we sell, that is our palm oil, and we are threatened by the European Union and also the Americans that they will take severe action against us. And the word they use is deforestation. Just because of deforestation and habitat loss, then they are going to be come down very hard on us as far as a sale of palm oil is concerned to EU. And it's already started, and that is why the ministry has joined a committee of four or five ministries in order to look into this. And there's a dedicated bill that is being already passed by the EU. So we are in touch with them and we are fighting them hard. But at the same time, I think it would help if the states realize the problems that we are facing and help us in trying to control deforestation. At the same time, we have started a whole program of reforestation whereby we want to make forest a new economy, and we are working with the states in order to give us more land area whereby we can plantation forests as the new economy for the states.
Well, then, on that note, how do you balance the need to conserve the biodiversity of our forests with our economic interest in commodities? We're talking about oil palm, rubber, durian. I think we've all seen the photos recently of, how the demand for durian is also driving some real problems with our forest. What is that balance? Can it be struck?
It can be struck.
Okay.
If everybody understands what is there in front of us. Number one, let me be very frank. I'm not really in favor of doing deforestation for durian plantations. I think we should try and do something else. China wants everything. You know, whatever you produce, China will swallow. So you have to draw a balance somewhere along the line. What do you want to do? I think we are spending a lot of money in reforestation programs. That means we are planting permanent forests in some areas in order to make sure that the central spine connectivity is there. But at the same time, we are also using the peripheral areas in order to grow new forests so that people can come and invest and have... Because we are experts in managing plantations. So why can't we manage a plantation of forests? There are new hybrid forest species that can grow within 3 to 7 years. You can harvest them after that. So this has to be a continuous process. So this is where we have to bring our stand to the European Union and also to others, saying that Malaysia is a developing country and we have a forest economy that needs to be supported by the government of the day and the states and the communities that rely on this. And so we just can't close our eyes and say, okay, we are not going to do any deforestation and we're going to keep all our forests. But how do we support these states in the future for them financially? So we'll have to come up with our new ideas as far as what is the definition of deforestation compared to the definition that's given by the Europeans to us as far as deforestation is concerned. So I think this is the challenge that we have at present and we'll be working very hard on it.
So national parks also fall under your yes. portfolio, and they are an important source of biodiversity. But there's also indigenous people living there. What is your ministry stance on claims by Orang Asli communities that their land is being encroached upon?
We have about 114 forest parks all over the country run by the Forest Department. They're beautiful areas they run, but these are not impinging on Orang Asli land. The Orang Asli land is more on timber concessions and deeper into the forest areas where they are saying that it is their land and that we have to be careful. But I think that is the balance that the states have to play with Orang Asli and work with them. And I think the Orang Asli are also ready to work with us in order to make sure it's a win-win situation for them and for us on the long run. And of course, the sensitivities are there. like what the Prime Minister said today, that the Orang Asli are part and parcel of the Malaysian society, and we would have to take care of their needs as well. So this is something that we will balance, and I think we can work out a more amicable solution as far as the Orang Aslis are concerned.
And Dr. Xavier, I mean, moving on to something that isn't directly within your ministry, but is certainly making the news, the government is being urged to abolish the quota system for pre-uni matriculation programs. As we know, that's that 90% allocation to Bumiputra students, 10% to non-Bumiputra. Education Minister Mazli Malik was reported as saying the current system will be maintained. PPBM have voiced their support. And the PM said this morning that the cabinet would meet to discuss this. What can you tell us about this?
I think this is something that we have to get some new directives and new directions from. Today, education is a very important, sensitive issue to all. And all parents want to make sure that their children get the proper training and get the proper degree that they want to. And there are more children today performing extraordinarily well in the exams that is in front of us. So there are more children getting 7 A's, 8 A's and 9 A's. So I think as a responsible government, we would have to provide for these people, irrespective of race and religion and whatever. And I think that is where the new direction should be. And of course, we are going to discuss it in cabinet. We have discussed it before, and now the minister will be present. And I think we will solve it amicably. I am 100% sure that the cabinet will come up with the correct directive in order to solve this problem for the future.
And in closing, Dr. Xavier, I mean, we just got this question, and I think it's quite fitting because we're coming up to the anniversary of May 9th. And Nur Savik wants to know, when you were the opposition, did you imagine it would really be this hard with the tariff increase, the maintenance, the lack of resources, global warming and all that?
We asked for it and we got it anyway. I think that's how we were to look at it. But of course, as an opposition, you know, you can shout and scream and do what you want to do and say what you want to say and then go back and have a good night's sleep. But now when we are in the responsible situation where we'll have to look at what the demand is and we'll have to have a solution for it. And this takes a bit of planning and this takes a bit of time. The problem is, I thank everyone for having given us this opportunity to change Malaysia. But change takes time. Change takes patience. Only when we came in, we realized that the national debt is that extensive and the amount of accounting that was misappropriated and money that was misappropriated is huge. So there's a huge balancing game that we have to play. And we are doing the best we can. I don't think we are faltering in any way, in any place, except for a few things which the opposition's perception is such that people have fallen into this. But then on the bigger scale of things, I think Malaysia is going to in the right direction. We are doing the right things. And people will accept us in the end. I'm very positive that the change that they have brought about will be the change they will see in the future for their children and grandchildren.
On that note, Dr. Xavier, thank you so much for taking part in today's town hall session.
Thank you very much.
To everyone who sent in the messages about water, we did receive them. Unfortunately, we did have to move on to other topics, but we will share them with Dr. Xavier and his team. So hopefully something comes of that. We have been speaking today with Dr. Xavier Jayakumar, the Minister of Water, Land and Natural Resources, about a whole host of topics. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.